Welcome to Frustrated and Exhausted, the podcast for women in leadership, where I help you fulfill your ambitions without sacrificing your sanity or your resilience. Today, as this episode is released, we're in the midst of Neurodiversity Awareness Week, and I'm in conversation with Susan Ball about a range of issues, all close to my heart. Susan is a highly experienced tax partner, and she's been a non-exec director and trustee of a range of third and public sector organisations. She's a past president and a fellow of the Chartered Institute for Taxation. And as if that wasn't enough, Susan is also a passionate advocate for diversity, social mobility and neurodiversity. And she was recognised for her work on the Diversity Power List at the end of 2023. Today, she'll be sharing her experience of leadership and of neurodiversity in the workplace. And she'll be sharing the lessons she's learned and some of the strategies she's found helpful to overcome challenges in her career. Join me for what will be a fascinating conversation. Susan, thank you so much for being with me today and agreeing to come on Frustrated and Exhausted and really share your lived experience of kind of your career and some of the challenges and how you've overcome them. I wonder if, just so that everybody can kind of get a bit of a feel for your background, if you could just explain a little bit about how you ended up working in tax.
To be honest with you, it was by chance, actually. It wasn't like I sat at school one day and said, this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. I left school after my A-levels. To be honest, I found the exams for a couple of years, because you do two lots of exams, quite tough. I'm dyslexic, and, you know, just writing that amount of stuff, actually.
Just hard.
It's really hard. And I also still have what could be described as doctor's handwriting. I think that's the phrase we use when it's a bit of a squiggle. And it probably was to disguise the fact that some of the words I probably hadn't spelt correctly, and hopefully nobody would notice. I thought, well, I do want to go on and do further education. And at that time, I looked into actually going to a polytechnic, as they were then. And I thought about this course, which I found, which was business studies. Whilst it was a four-year course, it was a good mix of exams and project work. And I felt that for me personally, that would have been the best balance. It wasn't all on one exam at the end, which I was going to pass or fail. I could gather points as I went along, which hopefully would give me in good stead for the bit that I found the hardest, which was the time pressure of an exam.
Yeah.
But that said, I also felt, after 4 years of what I felt was studying for exams, I wanted some time out. And I remember going home and saying to my parents, this is what I wanted to do. And I have to say, my father was less keen on the idea. And so he sort of suggested that if I did want to do that, he didn't say I couldn't do that, that I might like to fund myself for this year out I would like to take. Which is perfectly understandable, I'm sure. So I gaily went off and thought, oh my goodness, I need to find a job then. And I'll go and find a job. And the idea in my head was 6 months of working and 6 months going off and doing some traveling, and then I would take up my place at Poly, which I'd been allowed to defer. So that was the idea. Anyway, I went off looking for roles, and I think I first, I'll be honest, it's probably a bit of a scattergun approach, actually, on one level. So anything that sounded interesting, I applied for. I did sort of think that actually I might end up doing something in retail. I mean, I had kind of had that vague idea beforehand. Mm. And so I applied for some retail jobs. But my father was a civil servant. And I also spotted this opportunity to be a PA for somebody who was in customs and excise at the time, and thought, oh, well, I can type. That will be good. Why don't I try that? Sounds like a perfect job for a temporary period, and then to gain some money, and then off I go traveling. So I went along to the interview, got the job, and lo and behold, there I was as a PA. And to be fair, what I hadn't bargained on is both my father and the people I was working with persuading me how fantastic the civil service was as a career. And you know, with different perspectives, because I think if you hear it sometimes from your parents, you don't necessarily believe it. So other people telling me exactly the same thing. So I took on board what they were saying. They explained that there was this apprenticeship, effectively, that you could apply for. You had to sit an exam, and if you got through the exam, then the interview, and then effectively you're on a training program for a couple of years. So I thought, well, I haven't got anything to lose, have I? Basically, if you don't pass the exam, they'll all keep quiet. But if I do pass the exam, I've still got to get through the interview. And what's the worst? I've got choices. And so that's basically what happened. I passed the exam, passed the interview, got offered a place going to work in what was the Inland Revenue then, HMRC doing tax. And actually, it was just too good an opportunity. Being once you've been out and earned some money and you realize what you can do, for somebody to pay you to train, and for me not to then have to go through, I mean, I still had to go through exams, but in a, you know, a working environment where I felt I would probably do better. And I didn't really think I had anything to lose because I would come out at the end of the training program and be at the same place as I would have been had I gone to poly, albeit actually quicker. So, you know.
It's really interesting what you say there about that thought process of there's nothing to lose, I have choices, and how freeing in a sense that must have been at the time. So,
I think freeing and scary, actually, if I'm being
yeah.
honest.
What made it
Yeah.
scary?
Well, I just think that how do you make a decision about which is the right one? I think you know, I could have made the wrong decision and then actually ended up having to go back, but it didn't feel like that. And I think you know, probably for the first time, when you're going through that kind of process of working out what you want to do with your life, it was actually also a place I knew from all of these people who told me about it, that even if you perhaps didn't necessarily like the place you ended up in, and for me, you know, in tax, that because the civil service was such a big organisation, there were so many different roles within it, that actually, if you enjoyed the environment of working there, you could actually go and work and do something completely different. So that for me was a real, you know, sway. But it did mean I had to give up my idea of going traveling for 6 months. So I didn't do that, but I did then go on and you know, work in tax. And actually, you know, it was fantastic for me. The point about the mental challenge of it, being able to research things, solve problems, you know, so you
Really
might
suited.
have the same issue from a tax perspective, but everyone's circumstances are slightly different, so it always feels like it's slightly different.
So there's a sense of variety in that as well, and as you said, that problem-solving ability.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the early sort of start of your career. You know, at that stage, were you thinking, right, in X number of years' time, I'm going to be partnered in an accountancy firm. Was that sort of on the horizon in any way for you at that time?
Not at all. No, I mean, I, you know, started off in the civil service, and actually, I ended up doing just shy of 8 years there. So I had no idea that that was something I could do. But I did get to, you know, a point in my career where I realised that I probably had to stay and work within the civil service system, or I had another choice to make, which was to get out of that and go and do something. Not completely different, because I didn't, because I stayed in tax, but something slightly different, i.e. sit on what's perceived to be the other side of the fence. So when I did that, no, I didn't even think that I could get to the top. It was just one step at a time. I just thought, okay, I've been a civil servant now, I've seen what that's like. I'm not sure it's completely for me. It's such a large organization. While there are lots of opportunities, doing something slightly different and sitting on the other side of the fence was something that I thought I would enjoy more, perhaps, than being a civil servant there and then. And I suppose I also had, to be fair, my dad had been a civil servant for 40 years. So I looked at that and thought, not sure about this. So I thought I would, you know, have a look and see what the other side was like. And you know, I guess. I also thought that perhaps if I didn't like it, I might be able to go back. You never know. They might let me back in. So you know, I didn't sit there doing that. I kind of just treated it, I suppose, from my point of view, and I've always done this throughout my career, actually, is it's one step at a time. I know a lot of people like to have goals and their long-term goals. I guess I find it easier just to focus on the next thing, whatever the next thing is, and not necessarily go that too far ahead, and then it's sort of manageable and it's a bite-sized chunk, and you can, you know, realistically put steps in place to help you get there, which I think is quite important.
Yeah, I think sometimes that it can be overwhelming otherwise, and you sort of end up with so much pressure on yourself that you kind of lose that. You almost lose the focus that you need to keep taking the small steps, don't you?
You do. And
So,
I suppose the other thing I would say is that there weren't, you know, even when I joined the profession, there weren't that many female partners. So I think that probably had, you know, something in there in that, you know, whilst there were senior people in roles, there weren't that many females of it. And so therefore, if you take one step at a time, you're just taking one step towards it, and hopefully, things will change, and definitely have changed, you know, over recent years.
yeah, definitely. Sometimes, kind of fear of success, and I guess that's sort of what we're talking about here, can hold us back as much as the fear of failure. And you've talked about small steps and taking opportunities and looking for keeping those options open and having choices. I guess what I'm wondering is sort of you've kind of gone on to, you know, a really big role as sort of president of the Chartered Institute of Taxation. And obviously there's a lot of juggling involved in a role like that and your day job at the same time. How did you manage that?
Well, to be honest with you, I don't think I could have managed it without the firm being very supportive of me doing that. So I was in the lucky position that, you know, I explained what I wanted to do. I explained I had this opportunity, because I sat already on the board, and effectively the president comes from the people on the board. And I wanted to put my name forward because it is something that they vote on. You don't just automatically get it. And was would you know would the firm allow me to do it? Could I have the time to do it? Because I recognised that that wasn't something that wasn't going to impact my day job. And you know, quite rightly, what they said was, well, how will it impact your day job? You know, what do you think the requirement is for you to do? What sort of things will it be? And effectively, I put together a paper which explained these are the sorts of things I'll be doing. This is what it means. What I thought also it might bring to the firm by way of benefits to them, and asked them then if that was something that I could have the time to do. And as I say, they were very supportive, and very encouraging actually, which was good. So I was really lucky.
What's driven you to want, you know, you've kind of you've made partner, you've been president of the Chartered Institute of Taxation. What's driven you? What's made you want that?
It's a really good question. I think probably I'm just that kind of person that likes the next challenge to a certain extent. I suspect there's a little bit of an inner me that's trying to prove a point. You know, having been dyslexic, having had some challenges when I was younger, and you know, still do, to be honest. I can sit there sometimes wanting to express myself on paper, and struggle with the words that I want to say. I mean, we've got some fantastic technology now, so that's really been a godsend. But you know, that I suppose meant that I always had something to prove, if only to myself, that I could do it, that it was possible. And you know, even taking on the presidency as the institute, I undernarred a bit about it because one of the things that it required me to do was some public speaking. And although you would think I might be good at it, because I've done lots of presentations over the years on tax, I don't write notes that I don't find it easy to read from a script. So I don't write notes in the way that somebody else could necessarily suddenly take over from me and fill in the gaps. They're my pointers to remind me what I think I might say. And so you could actually hear me do exactly the same presentation twice, and it wouldn't be exactly the same because I will just go with the flow and have some pointers. Whereas obviously doing a role like that, you are the voice of the institute and you have to be very specific on certain things. You know, I was a little bit scared, to be perfectly honest, of doing that. So I think that's kind of, you know, it's that challenge of the next thing, and you know, setting yourself, as I said, some goals, but be it bite-sized goals, saying, you know, I can do this. The rest of the role, you know, I can do. There's this one bit, and that one bit shouldn't hold me back from doing it. And I think, you know, there's something to be said for that. I think we sometimes aren't as confident, you know, if we don't think we can do things and we're 100% sure we can do them. then naturally sometimes we don't put ourselves forward for them. We don't, push ourselves to do them.
Yeah.
Whereas in this case, I decided I was going to do that.
So, Susan, what do you feel the biggest learning has been for you out of that period where, you were out of your comfort zone, you were in a new challenging environment? What's the biggest thing you learned?
Take a deep breath. it's never as scary as you think it's going to be. So, and I think it's more in your head than it is in everyone else's. You wouldn't have got to that position had people not thought you could do it. And whether that be, I had to put my name forward to be president of the Institute, but they had to vote on me. So they voted on somebody that they thought could obviously do the job. Otherwise, they wouldn't have done that. So I think that, take a deep breath. I think, there's some other practical things like chairing meetings. You do certain amount of that perhaps in your working environment, perhaps not so much in a formal board setting. And that's slightly different. And, particularly over recent times where, you're not always in the room with people. You've now got a mixture potentially of online people in the room. And that's actually a bit of a challenge. Trying to make sure that, everyone feels they've got their time to say what they need to say. I think thinking strategically, I mean, again, I would say we've always done that. If you become a partner in a firm, you've had to do that along the way, but it's completely out of the box. It's a different organization. The Institute actually is a charity as well as a members organization, and there's that juggling between the two. And so, it's a totally different experience to what you might have seen when you're doing your day job. And so I think those things are, make it a really interesting role, made it a really interesting role for me, and so certainly something that I, learned from. I think, I was lucky, as I say, that the firm gave me the time to do it, but I do think, you can't do two jobs full time. You just can't do it. And that is as much about doing it in a work environment as it is in your home environment. I know we all like to think we can do absolutely everything, but the fact of the matter is you can't. Or you can for a period of time, but then at some point you might fall over because, the amount you need to take on to be able to do everything and to do it to the best of your ability means that there are only so many hours in a day and you can't manage all of that. So you do have to, be very clear where your boundaries are and what you can do and what you can't do. And we've seen that. It's very sad, actually. We've seen that recently, haven't we, with a number of high profile women actually taking their own lives because they couldn't cope for whatever reason. And I think we have to all think about, those sorts of situations and make sure we put some mechanisms in to be able to cope, be that, you can't do two full-time jobs, you've got to do, two half-time jobs or something, or, your home life. If you're doing a very long hours full-time job, something's got to give.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And there's this narrative around, we've superwomen, we're superwomen. And, I've been described as that. I've probably described other people as that. I'm sure you've had the same, but and it feels like you have to live up to that. And yet, there is a real mental impact of trying to do that and the guilt that we can carry sort of as a result. What are some of the main challenges that you've had? You're in a really high pressure role and have been for a long period. What are some of the main challenges you've faced as a woman, particularly in that role?
Well, I actually it's more to do with probably that balancing act of coping with what's going on in your life outside of work, as well as coping with what's going on at work. So, particularly, I suppose there's probably two, I mean, there's probably more than that, but there's two that spring to mind immediately. But one, when I was going through a divorce. So, that's a very stressful situation. Anyone who's been through that situation, doesn't matter, whether it was what you wanted, you didn't want, it's a stressful situation as you sort out your lives and separate that, in the best way possible. For me, I had a child to take into account as well, so that became quite difficult. And I was in a situation where I was juggling a job that was in one location, my child was in another location, and how was all that going to work? And you know, all parties try and feel that it was the best for them. And I think that was particularly a difficult period for me. I was in a lucky situation personally that I think one of the things that you do when you are doing a job for a long period of time is that you can't help but make friends through your job. So if you spend a lot of time with people, you find people who are similar to you or maybe not even similar to you, but who you get along with, and you would have got along with them had you not have something in common, which is work. But you spend a huge amount of time at work, and so you have something that actually gels you together. And I think for me, I certainly found after a period of time that I, for a while when I was younger, I tried to keep them completely separate, that it sort of merges more as you get older. And also, it's really useful to have, you know, people you meet through work who understand what you do. And now they don't necessarily have to do exactly the same thing. You know, it may just be that they work in the profession, so at least they understand how it works or something similar to it. But then you've got that to talk to them about. So certainly when I was going through a bad period when I was getting divorced, there were a couple of days when probably more than a couple of days, I'll say, but where it just was too much, you know, and I had to phone a friend and say, look, I need some help here. Now they were, you know, they worked alongside me and I just said, look, I can't do this today. I don't feel like I need to phone in sick, but I just don't have the confidence in myself that I will do the best job on this thing. And we work with clients, and so therefore I need some help to make sure that the job I'm doing is the best job. So either can you check this for me, which I, you know, a double check, because we already have checking processes anyway within the firms, but a sort of extra check on top of that, or actually can you just take it off me because I just can't do it. You know, I can't get my head around it. It's just one of those days. Please, can you help me? And explain to them what was going on. But I didn't want to necessarily tell the whole world what was going on, but I, you know, explain to some people who I trusted that this is what was going on and I was having a difficult time and could they help me out, please? And really luckily they did. I think sort of more recently, probably not dissimilar in the coping of with things. But you know, going through the menopause, I don't think we talk about these things enough. And I don't think I even realized what it would mean, you know, for me, or just generally what it meant for people going through it until it happened to me. And when you know, have brain fog and you forget things, and you're a person who doesn't normally forget things. I mean, albeit that with dyslexia, my very short-term memory is a little difficult. If you ring off a string of numbers to me, I might get the numbers, but not slightly in the right order. So I definitely write everything down. But my long-term memory was really good. And I, you know, I wouldn't do things which I found myself doing going through the menopause of walking into a room and not remembering why I'd gone in there, which you know, a lot of women experience, so I'm not alone in that, but it was very frustrating. And I think in the very early start of it, I thought I was literally going mad. I just didn't understand what was happening to me. I hadn't read up as much as I probably should have done, knowing that it wouldn't happen to me before it actually started happening to me. And you know, I found that incredibly difficult. So again, I had days where I just didn't feel I was functioning at my best. And I think the combination of that brain fog and sleep deprivation. I mean, I remember sleep deprivation. I think anyone who's had children remembers sleep deprivation. When you're that much older, it sort of hits you in a different way. You know, I remember when I was younger, sort of, you would catch up sleep as much as you could. You'd catch up sleep or find somebody who would cover for you, you know, so your husband would cover for you when you had a good night's sleep, and you would do things. But when you just can't sleep, even when you go to sleep for a reasonable length of time, so that you're only having a few hours sleep, and it's very disruptive sleep, the knock-on effects to how that makes you feel is immense, actually. You know, it's not very healthy, it does really impact how you can cope with things. You naturally, and anyone who's had children will remember this as well from sleep deprivation, is your ability to cope with things becomes less because it's, it's just too much on top of other things. So when you're working and you're in a stressful environment or a high pressured environment, then you think that you can't cope with things that perhaps you coped with easily before. And so again, being able to talk to people about it, and I think it's fantastic now that we are talking more about this in the work environment, because it does impact people, and they do need to have to be able to have, that space to talk about it should they wish to. I mean, clearly some people might not want to, it's fine too, but if it's impacting your job and you can explain to somebody, I'm really sorry, but this is what's happening to me at the moment, this is how I feel right now, or even basic things like, can we open the windows? I'm too hot. It just is better that we're able to have those conversations, and makes people feel more normalized in what they're going through, and therefore you are able to do a better job because people appreciate what's going on. Because if you're hiding things, and I mean, I did it, a lot also with my dyslexia, and I didn't tell anyone about it at work. If somebody point blank asked me, I talked about it. But if they didn't ask me, I didn't tell them. And really, that's only been in recent years that I've actually done that. It's that feeling safe to be able to have those conversations about things in a work environment that are impacting you, outside of work, and which you're now struggling to contain to outside of work because they're impacting how you feel when you come in and do your job. And I think we need to be much more open about that.
You said there that sort of relatively recently you'd started feeling safe to share some of these things. What have been the conditions for that from your perspective? So what has given you that feeling of being able to be more open or wanting to be more open?
I think it, I mean, obviously, those incidents I've talked about have spanned a period of time. So clearly, I've been open with some people, but I've not shouted things from the rooftop, shall we say? It's very, clear now, to people I'm dyslexic, because I now talk about it quite openly. I, have written articles about it. So it would be a surprise, I think, if people didn't know. And I think that's to do with the fact that, it's a confidence thing from my point of view to a certain extent, but also feeling that you are in a safe environment, that you can talk about this and that people will view it differently. From my point of view, I think, and a lot of perhaps people my age, and that's probably spanning not just specifically my age group, but quite a longer period of time, is that I was actually diagnosed when I was at school, but I wasn't diagnosed by the school. My parents took me out of school to get a diagnosis because they knew something wasn't right and the school wouldn't recognize it. So I spent the whole of my schooling with it. I knew, but nobody would do anything differently because of it. And I suppose it was seen at the time with that in mind, and when people talked about it very negatively, the positives weren't focused in on. And I think the thing that's changed quite dramatically, I think personally, in recent years, is that we are more recognizing that there's some different skills that you have, that it is actually something that you can't do anything about. It is how your brain functions, and that the skill sets that you have that are slightly different because of that are very useful skills, and they are positive. So I think the fact that, that narrative has changed a bit, and there's more information out there again to people about what the challenges some people have, and the trouble with, being dyslexic and or anything else that's a neurodiversity, is that, what I might have and what are my challenges might not be exactly the same as somebody else, even though we've got the same diagnosis. And so if you ask somebody, I mean, spelling is one of them, and that is one of mine. So, but there are other things, like I can read things on a page. They don't jump around. I don't need filters. But I can also, when I'm talking, jumble my words up. Particularly if I'm stressed, that becomes more pronounced. So the, not everyone has the same challenges, even if you have the same diagnosis. So I think, just that general recognition now that there are positives to it. It's a different skill set. The fact we've got more technology, so that it's made it very easy for me to, counteract some of the things I'm not very good at by using all the technology. So, talking to my computer, not necessarily typing things, because as I said to you earlier, sometimes I can't spell a word. And I know what the word is. I can say it. I can get it in the right context, but I can't actually spell it. And I don't even know where to start sometimes. And what's frustrating is one day I do know, and the next day I don't know. So the fact that I can talk to my computer and it can type, it actually helps. And usually when I see something on the page, I can also spot when there's an error in it. Better sometimes at critiquing other people's work than my own, because I can't see the error in my own, but I can see an error in somebody else's. So you build mechanisms for that. But I think it's the fact that, we're all more open about talking about things, we're talking about the strengths. And basically also, I think I didn't see it as a disability. And so I never ticked a disability box. So if you asked me, sent me an application form, or you asked me to self-disclose on anything, was I disabled? I'd say no, because I don't see myself as disabled. I just think my brain works differently. I have different strengths and weaknesses. That's all. And so again, the fact that people started providing the ability to tell what your potential issues might be and what help you might need without having to tick a disabled box, again, made it much easier to say, well, this is my challenge. This is what I'm not good at. There's a reason I'm not good at it. It's not just I'm not good at it. And therefore, these things help me. And that being much more open now, I think is a lot easier for everybody. But I recognize again, there's still people who don't want to disclose.
I guess everybody has their choices to make about what feels right for them at what time. You said earlier about the skills that actually dyslexia gives you. It's a different skill set. How do you think your differences, and you're broader than dyslexia, how have your differences supported you in your career?
I think something that I would say from my dyslexia is a thing is the fact that you can take in a lot of information and sort of sort the wood from the trees. I think the other thing is plain English, because clearly I like plain English because I can spell that. So I found that everybody said before they even knew I was dyslexic that my communication to people who didn't understand the world of tax was very good because it was very plain, it was very clear. So I think that was something that is a skill. Lots of other people have it as well, but it happened to help me in that I was taking in complicated things potentially in the tax world and trying to explain it to somebody who was a non-tax person in a way that they could understand it, and that was really helpful. So I think it's those sorts of things. I think from a going back to school point of view, I suppose in some respects, not going to university was a bit of a challenge at one point, and I used to keep quiet about that as well. But it gave me, a different outlook with the environment I had and having done an apprenticeship than I would have had I spent the same amount of time in uni. I might have had more fun, I think it's just different, and it's how you use those experiences as you go through your career and how you learn from them. Clearly, it was beneficial to me to learn and do training on the job as you went along, as opposed to sitting there and reading a lot of stuff. So even now, again, if I'm reading legislation that's new, my colleagues know that I will probably phone them up and start wanting to talk about it, because I find that having read it, to really understand how it works in lots of different scenarios, I like to bounce it off somebody and go, right, we've got this situation and I think it applies like that. Do you think it applies like that? What do you think about X? How do you think this works? And that really helps it sink in for me.
So it's sort of really, it's about understanding what works for you and then playing to that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. That sounds great. So you've now been in quite a number of leadership roles in sort of different environments. What do you think makes a good leader?
That's really difficult on one level, because I think it's a number of different things. I think you've got to have some belief. You've got to have some belief you can do it. Because actually then that puts you in the right mindset, I think. Also that you are there on merit, You did a good enough job that somebody's given you that opportunity, that somebody says you can do this. And so you need to have that confidence. And I know we don't all display it all of the time, but I think you do need to have that within you. I think perhaps for women, sometimes it's that you have to try and get that balance between how you come across. That can be a bit of a challenge. I think you also learn as you become more senior not to be afraid to ask for everything, whatever that is. I think, if you go back to my early career, you could say, well, I wanted a promotion. I probably could have asked for things earlier, but I didn't have the confidence to do that. And then I found my confidence and thought, what have I got to lose? It goes back to my very beginning. What have I got to lose? I can ask them, why aren't you promoting me? What do I need to do to get this promotion? And they're going to tell me, and then you've obviously got to take away in that and work on it. But I think that's the same in a good leader. You need to still have that ability to ask questions, not be afraid to ask questions, not to challenge things. It doesn't have to be the status quo. I think you need some inner strength, flexibility, and maybe a bit of courage to step into things that you're not so sure about. And I think it helps to have a good team around you as well.
Yeah, always. Definitely. What's the most challenging aspect of leadership from your perspective?
Depends on where you are in the organization. I guess if you're at the very top, it can be a lonely place. So it is that, part about thinking about what's going on around you and making sure you have people you can talk to, even if it's outside the organization, making sure that you are, able to understand what's going on and you have people who will be honest with you, and you find that group. Because I think, whatever you're doing, you've always got to have the ability to accept that you might not be doing the best job, that somebody else might have an idea that's a really good idea, and you've got to be prepared to listen to that. And so you've got to make sure you have that environment that people feel that they're able to do that. So I think that's very important.
Always easy to do, but extremely important, definitely. This has been a really fascinating conversation. We've kind of covered a lot in terms of, from neurodiversity and the challenges that that has kind of placed on you in your career, taking small steps, all the sort of things to overcome that, and all the other things in along the way, and finding your own path, one that works for you. Before we finish up, I've got a few little questions that I'd like to kind of ask, just to kind of give us a different impression of you, I guess, and who you are. So first off, what makes you laugh?
Well, I suppose comedy shows on the telly, my family sometimes. We got a dog in lockdown. He's a bit cheeky. So
Keep you
oh,
on your
there's
toes.
lots of different things that make me laugh.
What's your proudest moment of all the moments that you've had in this career of yours?
Obviously, I have a son. I'm very proud of my son. So that's very important. Personally, for me, I suppose actually it was taking on the role of presidency of the Institute because that is my professional body. And to have got to a stage where, people thought I could do that. And I did it. And they seem to have been pleased with the fact that I did a good job at it. It's made me immensely proud.
That's fantastic. Finally, how do you celebrate? How do you celebrate all these successes in small steps?
Probably a glass of wine.
Glass of wine on a Friday night.
I suppose, yeah, I mean, I think it depends. Sometimes with my friends, obviously, but I think it's about, even if it's just a little cheer, sometimes it, even when you're doing something during your working day and it goes well and you think, yes, it's just that, yes, that went well. That's a good job done.
Yeah, just feeling it inside.
Yeah.
Yeah, brilliant. Susan, thank you so much for your time today. I know people are going to get a lot out of this conversation in lots of different ways. You've got such a rich career and so much experience to share. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. It's been good talking to you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Frustrated and Exhausted. Hit the follow button for future episodes. You can also follow me on Instagram at Resonate Leadership and LinkedIn at Ruth Alexandra Wood. I'd absolutely love to hear from you. Frustrated and Exhausted is brought to you by Resonate Leadership and the wonderful team at the Podcast Boutique. I'm your host, Ruth Wood. Take care and speak to you soon.